From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. The clothesline, it's an old-fashioned, perhaps even quaint installation that's fading from modern culture, but the metaphor it offers is the centerpiece of a new show called The Clothesline Muse, playing Keenan Auditorium this Saturday. Two of the creators of that show are also collaborating with UNCW and New Hanover County Public Schools through a two-week artist residency at Williston Middle School. Williston is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, but its history actually goes back quite a bit further. And these two artists are helping students at Williston learn about that history and create an art project which chronicles it. The students' final piece goes on display Friday at the Arts Council Gallery on Front Street in downtown Wilmington. On today's edition of Coastline, we'll meet one of the creators of the Clothesline Muse, and we'll find out how the clothesline metaphor relates to the history of the Williston School. Joining us now in the studio is six-time Grammy-nominated jazz singer Nina Freelon. Nina, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a blessing to be here.
And that cut that we just heard at the top of the show was actually from your album, Blueprint of a Lady, Sketches of Billie Holiday.
Yes, yes. Yes.
We also have Bobbyette Palmer joining us in the studio. She's the production manager. Bobbyette, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. I'm so great. Glad to be here.
For us to get a handle, Nina, on the metaphor of the clothesline, tell us about your show, The Clothesline Muse. You play the lead, Grandma Blue,
yes,
who's on her way to an old folks' home.
Right. Grandma Blue is getting ready to go to that elder place where we and this is her last. The play opens with the last night that she's going to be in her home. Her granddaughter has come to help usher her into this next phase of her life. She's not totally willing to go. And the entire play is built on this. You know, Grandma Blue is a retired washerwoman. And she's what some people would call a pack rat. She's gathered all kinds of things and has difficulty letting go of things because they have meaning to her. Her granddaughter, however, doesn't see it that way. She, everything she picks up, everything she touches looks like throwaway to her, looks like disposable, like it's not important.
And so her granddaughter is happy about the idea of cleaning some things out and
yes,
moving Grandma Blue
She's
on.
She's trying to move her out. So the whole evening is packing, unpacking. Grandma, she's packing Grandma up. Grandma is unpacking. Grandma says, you know, I'm willing to go, but I want to leave you with some things before I do. Every story in the Clothesline Muse is attached to an article of clothing. And the stories are the central focus of the play. We have five dancers. I play the role of Grandma Blue. We have a wonderful actress, Clotilde Horn, who's playing the role of Mary Mack. And so the stories are played and displayed through the body in the dancers, through visuals, through projections, and through this wonderful paper sculpture that Maya Freelon Asante has designed. And every time Mary Mack picks up something and says, look at this, why are you holding on to this? Grandma says, let me just tell you a story. And so these stories emerge from the articles of clothing.
And how is that informing the work that you're doing with the students at Williston? What's your goal with those kids?
Well, again, we have to go back to the idea of the story as being the central focus of everything. And I personally believe that if we listened to one another's stories, there would be a lot less conflict in the world. Think about the clothesline, if you will. When you see those clothes hanging on a line, it gives you some indication of what's happening in the house. If you see diapers on the line, you know there may be a baby there. If you see men's work clothes, you make certain assumptions. If the good tablecloth goes out, you know they must be expecting company. So the clothesline was an early indicator of community. It was also the place where we gathered for conversation. When those clothes, it took a lot of time and effort to wash clothes by hand, to hang them out. And so women would gather and have a kind of dialogue that you really couldn't do in other kinds of housework. So along with the disappearing clothesline is the disappearing culture that went along with it.
And when you're working with these kids, you've also been teaching them about interview skills, because that's part of what this is.
Absolutely.
It's getting the story from some of their elders, community elders, also just elders in their own families.
Right.
Isn't that right?
That's right. When we think about the clothesline, it is an early apparatus for drying clothes, but it's also an early place for culture. It's an early place for story. Now kids have a different muse. Their muse is the internet. They are online, but in a quite different way. So we're using their connection to social media and other types of internet culture to grab them and to get them interested in old school and new school. So we've been teaching interview skills. How do you speak to someone who could be your grandmother's age or your mother's age? What's the proper way to address? How do you ask an open-ended question? How do you ask a question so that you entice a person to tell you a story? And these stories we are going to display on a clothesline at the Arts Council Gallery, the stories that the children have collected.
And how do they go from being a story to a piece of artwork that gets on a clothesline?
Well, part of that is Maya's brilliant notion that when you display stories, you allow a kind of a public recognition and a public acknowledgement that these stories exist. Because a lot of what goes on is invisible. And it's invisible until you put it on a flag and wave it, or you hang it on the clothesline and wave it. You invite eyes. You invite inquiry. You invite, gee, I wonder what that is. And so it's a very positive way and encouraging way to blend the stories, the old stories and the new stories, because we've asked the children to share clothesline memories of their own. And very interestingly, some of them say, well, I don't have any clothesline memories. You know, I never did. We have a dryer. But as they begin to think and talk, well, I remember my grandma's clothesline. And I remember, you know, so you'll see when you see the artwork at the Arts Council Gallery how they view this antiquated piece of technology.
So they are relating to it from their own actual experience.
Absolutely.
Even if they didn't grow up with one in their backyard.
Absolutely.
What are some, we have just a minute before we go to break, but briefly, what are some of the more surprising stories that are coming from the kids as you work with them?
I think they tie the clothesline, some of them, to being poor, which is something I found really interesting. They think you dry clothes because you can't afford to do it any other way.
We'll hear more about that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with Nina Freelon and Bobbiette Palmer about the Clothesline Muse and their artist-in-residency work at Williston School in Wilmington. We're learning about the history of this more than 100-year-old school that started from a group of missionaries who wanted to provide a high-quality education for the descendants of slaves. This is Coastline.
That's got shall get, them that's not shall lose.
Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And I'm here with accomplished jazz singer Nina Freelon and Bobbiette Palmer, production manager for the Clothesline Muse. We're talking about how the history of Williston School in Wilmington feeds the stories of the Clothesline, a show, the Clothesline Muse, that's playing Keenan Auditorium, UNCW, this Saturday night. And you're invited to join the discussion. Did you attend Williston? Do you have children that go to Williston now? We'd love to hear your stories, and you can send them to us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at CoastlineHQR. And Nina, before we went to break, once again, by the way, that's from your album Blueprint of a Lady, Sketches of Billie Holiday. Might talk us into changing our show music. That's pretty inspiring stuff. Before we went to break, we were talking about some of the kids mining stories from community elders.
Yes.
And you had the students talking with a 90-year-old who attended Williston. Can you tell us about that?
The thing that really struck me about this intergenerational conversation is, first of all, that it even happened. Think about the last time a sixth grader, it's an 11 or 12-year-old person on the planet, had a meaningful, strong conversation with an elder. And the gap between their ages makes it almost as if they're from different planets. Yet they spoke to one another. They acknowledged the children had insightful and interesting questions. They were curious. Some things were funny. Some things were surprising. And I'm still in awe of how beautiful that was. We had some wonderful stories. One child said, "Did you all have sports back then?"
They hadn't invented sports
yet.
Had
they invented sports then? And Miss Anderson, a 78-year-old wonderful woman, said, "We had a game called Rolling Back. Have you all heard of that?" And nobody had heard of it. I hadn't heard of it either. So she described the game. And one person asked her, "What was your favorite job?" And she said that her favorite job was being the popcorn girl at the movie theater. And for what she was paid for that job, just she felt like she was a really rich woman. We're talking about, you know, a half a penny a day or 30 cents a week for doing really hard labor. And so kids were doing the math and thinking, wow. You work tobacco for that kind of money. You pick beans and peas for that kind of money. It was just a revelation.
Did you have to work with the kids to ignite their curiosity in the beginning? Were they naturally open and interested in their elders, or was this something that you kind of had to drive the message home about why there's value here?
Well, I described our guests in the classroom as living histories, as libraries, as sort of superheroes from another era that have information for us. And I believe every child is interested if we create a setting that allows that to happen. And you can't be interested if you're plugged in, if you got your headphones on and your eyes glued to a screen. There's nothing wrong with technology, but for all of its advantages, it cuts us off from conversation. Conversation is a dying art. So again, we're talking about the story. This is something that you can't get by Googling. These are first voice stories. These people live this history. And so if you are to get it, you have to get it while the getting is good. And so once I framed it that way, they were all over it. As curious as they are about their iPads, they're just as curious about things that are in front of them if you lead them. And I'm ever so proud of my sixth graders. They did such an amazing job.
And Williston has some particularly compelling history because this is a school that was started in, I believe, the 19th century.
Yes.
By a group of missionaries and parents who wanted to create a high-quality education.
Yes.
For the descendants of slaves, for
yes.
freedmen.
Yes, and we had to bring into the conversation we're talking about history. We're talking about American history. We're talking about laws and rules. So we had to speak about Jim Crow laws. We had to speak about segregation.
And was this something that they had heard about before?
They had heard about it, but it was flat, two-dimensional information for them. Segregation was a word.
And so then to be able to talk to somebody who actually went to Williston before 1968.
Absolutely.
When it was still a segregated school, that must have been just.
Well, I made sure that we got to know our subjects before we started talking about those kinds of things. And interestingly enough, I heard no bitterness, no anger, no. They talked about it as something that was a part of that time and wrong, but that's how you get to be 90 years old. You know, because if you're carrying a bunch of heavy weight around, you don't last that long. And so the children got a chance to observe some things were happening under the radar. Now we were doing an educational thing. We were honoring Williston legacy. We were gathering information, but we were also breaking down intergenerational barriers. There's no way these kids are going to run into Miss Anderson or Miss Thomas in the future and not see a human being with story. You know, it is also a violence prevention kind of thing, because these heads and hearts and minds have become engaged with their stories.
And this is one of the things that we at the station have noticed in interviewing some of the luminaries, some of the Williston alumni, the connections, especially pre-1968, that still exist between people in this community, even if they've moved out of town. I think a neighbor of yours, Dr. Philip Clay, he's in Boston at MIT.
Yes.
And he still speaks regularly with Bertha Todd and some of the other luminaries who were part of that community. And they talk about it almost as if it was this magical time. What do you think the big lesson from that time was? Why did the students do so well? Why did they feel so nurtured? Why is this retelling of this history so important?
I think we're trying to, you know, we want our schools, we want our children to succeed. We want them to succeed in every way imaginable. So we are doing something that I think is brilliant. We are putting some roots with the wings. You can't fly if you don't have those roots. The kids are springing off from nowhere. So in reaching back for some of these wonderful life skills and life knowledge, even though it wasn't an ideal situation, no one is saying segregation was a good idea. What we are saying is there are aspects of the Williston community, of neighbors knowing one another, of families being involved, of teachers who loved their children.
That's a word that keeps coming up.
Love. I mean, at the end of the day, it really does come down to love. And there was more autonomy in the classroom and more autonomy in the community, where if you did something wrong, not only did your teacher speak up, but everybody else, all the other voices you heard, were saying, and that's right. You know, you shouldn't be doing that.
And this is something, there was a community night just Monday night, a couple of nights ago, and it was a chance for Williston alumni to reconnect and to hear from you about the Clothesline Muse and your work with the kids, the Artist in Residency project. And we heard people who are in their 70s and 80s say things like, that's right, if you didn't meet expectations in school, then right after school was out, that teacher was at your parents' door telling them what you did or didn't do in school.
That's right.
And that's something that we just can't do today.
It's not even allowed. It's not allowed. But I think we can take lessons from them. We have to create a new paradigm. There's no way we can go back to 1930. But we can take, in our quest to give our children some things to lift them up a little higher, we've failed to give them some things that we did have. And the things that we did have are still under our control to give. And so
we're talking with jazz singer Nina Freelon and Bobbiette Palmer, production manager. We've kept her quiet over here, but we're going to talk to her in just a moment. We're talking about the new show, The Clothesline Muse, which plays Keenan Auditorium this Saturday, and their two-week artist residency at Williston Middle School in Wilmington in collaboration with UNCW. That school is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, but its history predates even 1915. If you have a question, a comment, or your own Williston story, send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using coastlinehqr. Bobbiette Palmer, you've been documenting a lot of this. I've noticed you always have the video camera ready.
I do.
And Monday night you were recording the community family night. What are some of the more striking moments that you've seen emerge during the residency?
You know, some of the striking moments that I saw were on family night when, you know, as being part of the crew, you know, we get bits and pieces of sometimes what's going on. But there was such a sense of community and the intergenerational dialogue seemed as though it was strong here. One thing that I really loved was when everyone was singing, and it kind of happened like spontaneously, like a couple times, and everyone in the room just, you know, they knew the song and they all just kind of joined in. And it was just really heartwarming to see that so many of these stories have survived and are, you know, the community is really thriving among the memory of the history and how the elders in the community are so willing to bring the younger generation up, you know. So it was really interesting to see that. You know, we document a lot of different things all around the United States with people coming in and just getting snippets of stories of the clothesline and coming up and how the differences are and how stark those differences are. So being part of my generation, you know, which is, I guess, would be the younger generation. I don't know what that's relative to, but I am very interested in documenting and, you know, and I do love social media. And I, even when I started working with Nina and Maya on this project, what, like 3 years ago, it was something that really resonated because everyone has the need to tell stories and to be connected. And social media is another online, you know. And as the clothesline muse evolves, it's really interesting to see how those what seemed to be stark differences really become similarities. And, you know, you kind of can see that commonplace between the generations.
Nina Freelon, are any of these stories that you're picking up from your time here at Williston going to find their way into the clothesline muse? Do you think as the show travels around the country and you do more outreach and meet more people in communities like this one, there will be material that you'll weave into that show?
That's one of our dreams. Bobbyette is helping us just in observing and documenting. Bobbyette and Steve are helping us figure out ways to weave stories from the places that we live into. So we want to see these stories woven because we want the clothesline muse ultimately to be about place. There are urban clothesline stories. There are southern clothesline stories. There are Chinese laundry stories. And they're all relevant. The clothesline is a sturdy place in which to tell stories and a sturdy place to talk about things that are hard.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with jazz singer Nina Freelon and Bobbyette Palmer about their show, The Clothesline Muse, the artistic residency going on at Williston Middle School in Wilmington. What this younger generation is learning, not just about the history, but about the importance of the wisdom of elders in the community. If you have a Williston story, share it with us by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, six-time Grammy-nominated jazz singer Nina Freelon and Bobbyette Palmer, production manager of The Clothesline Muse. We're talking about their new show, The Clothesline Muse, which plays Keenan Auditorium this Saturday, and their artistic residency. It's a two-week residency, which is unique, at Williston Middle School in Wilmington, where they're teaching students about the value of the history of elders in the community. They're also helping the students to create an art project that gets installed tomorrow and opens Friday at it's the Art Gallery of the Arts Council in Wilmington, in downtown Wilmington on Front Street. And if you have a Williston story and would like to share it with us, send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. Nina Freelon, Monday night at the Williston Community Night, this was a night that Williston alumni came together. So many of them had graduated from Williston before 1968, when it was still a segregated school. And this is sort of the golden era of Williston, it seems, because these people, as we've talked about, still have these powerful connections. And there was a lot of talk about what it was like to come up in a segregated school. Mm-hmm. And you seemed to, I don't know if this was planned, but it appeared to be spontaneous. you burst into song, a song from the Clothesline Muse. Separate your whites and colors.
That's right.
Could you do
right.
a little bit of
sure,
it for us?
Sure. Mama always told me, you better listen to me, child. Separate your whites and colors. Put each in a separate pile. There's a proper way to do things, and it's always been this way. Separate your whites and colors. It's the order of the day. It's the order. It's the order of the day. When we talk about that metaphor of separating whites and colors in the context of clothing, all minds and hearts are open. Even a sixth grader understands that if you mix colors and whites in the same wash, there's going to be some staining going on. But when we talk about it in the context of segregation, it takes on another tenor altogether. And I use that safe place to talk about something hard. My daddy said to me, separate those whites and colors. It's the way it has to be. Never wash them all together. No dark colors, green or gray. They belong with all the colors on the other side of town. They belong with all the colors on the other side of town. Even a sixth grader knows that's wrong.
And when you present that to these kids at Williston today, kids who were born long after this era ended, although we still, quite frankly, have issues, particularly in this community.
Sure.
But this is a generation that isn't saddled with a lot of that. I don't want to call it baggage. But how do they react when that discussion comes up?
They said in a very childlike
mm-hmm.
fashion. That's wrong. Ms. Freelon, that's wrong. One kid said, that's racist. Mm-hmm. And I said, how many of y'all feel that's wrong? Hands went up. If something seems wrong, smells wrong, sounds wrong, it's wrong. And I challenged them when they see things wrong in their worlds, because there are things that ain't quite right in 2015, they are to speak up. Because this used to be the law of the land. So somewhere along the line, somebody voted and said this was a good idea. If you disagree, raise your hand and speak up. Because that's what being American really means. You open your mouth and you say when you see something that's wrong. So, and then to sort of look at our guest, Miss Anderson, who's a sweetheart. I wouldn't make any laws that would keep her from drinking out of a water fountain. Would
and
you?
Just to be clear, you're talking about a 78-year-old woman who graduated from Williston.
That's right. That's right. And she talked about the colored water fountain and the first time that she had tasted cool water when they snuck a little drink out of the white water fountain, and that water was chilled, and the water in the colored water fountain was as hot as it was outside. So she talked about the inequity. She talked about the fact that when there was a fire at Williston and burned part of the school and all of the desks needed to be replaced, well, when those new desks came in, the students at Williston did not get the new desk. The new desks went to the white school, and the Willistonians got the old desk. Even a young child understood that that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that old saying, and a child shall lead us, maybe we need some leaders who are children in different roles of authority. And I tease them. I'm like, can you all vote? Anybody here vote? Can you drive? Do you have a driver's license? It's like, well, you know, they're not giving you young people too much power, are they?
Is that what you mean when you, the other night, Monday night, you were talking to the Williston alumni and you said, we're stirring up trouble here in Williston. What do you mean by that? What kind of trouble are you stirring up?
The best kind of trouble is inquiry. We discourage inquiry in school. And when a child raises his or her hand and says why, we're like, stop it. You know, you're messing up the flow. We're on a schedule here. Inquiry is the mother of every great innovation we know. We should be encouraging the question why. All of us should be curious. The curiosity is being squeezed out of our children. Creativity is being squeezed. Yet, this is the age of innovation. This is the age of information. Our grandparents lived a handmade life. These children are living a life based on their head and their heart and their imagination. If we squeeze that out of them, we have nothing left.
You've talked about the dangers of teaching to the test.
Oh,
and
yes.
What you're doing at Williston, this residency, is a form of arts integration. And we've actually talked about that before on this show and what that does for kids. But can you just, for people who don't know what arts integration in education means, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Arts integration engages the entire child, as opposed to teaching U.S. history based on dates and facts. And asking for the part of the brain, the very small part of the brain that's involved in memorization, we actually bring history to life. We bring whole child education. And I guarantee you, these children will be able to give you, the children that have been through this residency will be able to tell you all about this subject area because they have been engaged. They have been challenged to use their higher thinking skills to figure out, well, gee, what did segregation really mean? They wouldn't have to go to that very small real estate in their brain that has to do with memorization. They would have more, I mean, brain science backs us up, that there are more brain cells firing when you engage the whole child. And I have a theory that when we teach from the neck up, we ignore, you know, 80% of the physical body. So the children need to move with the material. They need to dance with the material. They need to sing the material. We need to engage all of the senses when we are teaching. And it doesn't have to take away from core curriculum areas. The most underutilized resource in American public education are our art teachers. Why isn't the science teacher speaking to the art teacher? When we're building pyramids in art class, why aren't we connecting with the math teacher to get the geometry and the mathematics that it's involved in that creation? It's ridiculous, especially when you look at the world of innovation and invention that involves breaking down these artificial barriers of knowledge and these, you know, these glass houses that say geometry is here, physical sciences are here, natural sciences are here, language arts are here, and the two shall never meet.
And when you're talking about arts and say science, we've heard educators say one of the ways that you can do that is by teaching kids a dance of the amoeba.
And
that way they're internalizing in their bodies.
Absolutely.
What actually the science, and so it's much easier for
them to
learn.
I think people are afraid that it looks too much like fun. but this is my feeling. When the school bell rings and the kids rush out into the cool air and they are full of energy and you're exhausted, there's something wrong with it. They should be exhausted and you should be, you know, you as the teacher should be, you know, because we're doing too much for them.
Yeah. We have just about a minute or so left in the show. And I heard a rumor from our resident jazz expert, George Scheibner, that you have a really interesting story about getting a record contract with Columbia. a little off topic, but I hear it's a great story. Can you tell me about that quickly?
George Butler, the person who eventually signed me to Columbia Records, I waited outside of his hotel room for about 3 hours until I could get an audience with him. And then I burst into song. I sang a song in the lobby with many people standing around.
You tend to do that.
Yes, I do tend to burst in. But at the time, I was shy. It's hard to believe. But I used to be shy. No more.
And so you burst into song in the hotel lobby and got a record contract.
That got me his ear. You know, it took, I have to say God helped me with that, because I don't think, I don't suggest that as necessarily the way to do it, but it really worked for me.
It worked for you. Six-time Grammy nominated jazz singer Nina Freelon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel.
Bobbyette Palmer, production manager with Clothesline Muse, thanks for being here today. Clothesline Muse is at UNCW's Keenan Auditorium this Saturday night, March 28th. Visit our website for more information at whqr.org. That's this edition of Coastline. Tune in next week when we talk with local gardening experts about what grows well here and what to plant now. That's next Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.